Have you ever wondered what it would feel like to cast a hand-built custom bamboo fly rod? And how about fishing with horsehair leader and a traditional fly, all while catching and going for large steelhead? My guest Ed Few today did just that on our last trip to the Great Lakes, and today he's going to show you how he did it and how you can get started with traditional fly gear today. This is the Wet Fly Swing Podcast, where I show you the best places to travel to for fly fishing, how to find the best resources and tools to prepare, and what you can do to give back to the fish species we love. Hey, I'm Dave, host of the Wet Fly Swing Podcast. I've been fly fishing since I was a little kid. I grew up around a fly shop and have created one of the largest fly fishing podcasts in this country. And I've also interviewed more of the greatest fly anglers than just about anybody on this planet. Today, Ed Few is here, my good friend who I met for the first time on our big Great Lakes Steelhead School trip with Jeff Liskay. Ed shares the setup he used and how he became a rod builder after building boats from a master in England. Some amazing stories here that Ed shares about not working too much. Plus, you're going to find out what is next for Ed and how you can get your hands on one of Ed's custom rods for free in the Bamboo Rod Share program. All today on the podcast, time to cross back over the pond. Here we go. Ed Few, and you can find him at Bamboo Few on Instagram. How you doing, Ed?
I'm doing great, Dave. Thank you very much for having me. Pleased to be here. How are you getting on?
Yeah, good. I appreciate you taking the time. We've got lots of stories to tell today. I think we're going to be running low on time, but I'm going to dig into this as much as we can. And I think the cool thing is we met in person. This is, I think, one of the great things about the programs we're doing now, kind of with our fishing schools and trips and things like that. So we met at the Jeff Liskay, the Great Lakes Steelhead School, and with the crew out there, and we fished. We fished together, which was, and we've got this great story about this epic, fish and kind of day on the river where you caught everything on a bamboo rod you built by hand and horse hair, leader and the fly and everything. So we're going to talk about that today. And then also some on your boat building. You do a lot of cool stuff without using tools. So I think that's a really interesting thing we're going to hear about today. Before we get into all that, take us back to fly fishing. What's your first memory? How'd you get into it?
So fly fishing itself, and I was thinking about this because I knew you were going to ask this question. I can't actually pinpoint exactly my first memory of fly fishing. I absolutely know when I caught my first trout. I know other fish, and that was not fly fishing. But the actual kind of like the fly fishing itself, I'm not 100% sure, but I know, like, thinking about it, it was around about the age of 10. I'd been fishing for quite a while, probably since I was about six. Now, I really was the only person in my family that fished. My dad did fly fish, and so did both my grandfathers did, but only one was alive when I was growing up. And I just remember being down at the local river with a rod that I'd been given by our doctor, which was a coarse fishing rod. It was not a fly rod. And I'd been given a centerpin reel by my grandfather, which was just an old centerpin reel. And I couldn't cast the rod. Everyone else was fishing with spinning reels. And my friend Lawrence said, "Here, I'll show you how to do it." And he cast it like you cast a fly rod. I couldn't believe it. It was unbelievable. I just thought, wow, that's so cool. And I kind of knew about fly fishing, but didn't realize that would work. And I always thought about, like, that was the way he just threw it back with the little weights and threw it forward, and it went forwards, landed in the water, and the little float just bobbed on down. I thought that was very, very, very cool. And that was it for me. I was hooked at that point and saved up my pocket money.
Right.
Bought myself a fly rod, a fly reel, a fly line. And I started kind of like at every opportunity fishing the little trout farms and ponds that we had around the area.
Gotcha. And where was that? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Cambridge. I actually grew up in the town till I was about nine. And my friend Lawrence, I was talking about, lived at the end of the street. We lived in a little batch of terraced houses, which I guess a lot of people call townhouses here in the States. But, yeah. It was like a terraced houses on both sides of the street. There was a little brush factory on the opposite side in the middle. His dad owned the cooker shop at the end of the street, and they lived above it. And we would, go off and cause trouble down at the local river.
That's it. And when was your move out to, how did you get out here to the US? Because now you're in, I think you're in Atlanta.
I'm in Atlanta now. I was, my wife, is the reason I'm in Atlanta. So I met her in 2005 when I was working on the punts back in England, on the tour boats back in England. We kept in touch. We reconnected in 2015. I was coming off the back of a fairly heavy charter season down in the Caribbean, and I just happened to be flying back through Atlanta to the UK, and I stopped in and saw her, and really the rest is history.
Yeah, the rest is history. Awesome. And then, and what was the charter? So this is a big part of what you have going, because now you've got this, this fly rod we're going to talk about that you built by hand, this bamboo rod, and, had this experience on this trip. But before that, you had the boat building and then this charter. Maybe describe that. What was the work you were doing back there in the Caribbean?
So yeah, in the Caribbean, I was working on sailing boats. And it was, I was a charter captain. I wasn't racing the boats or anything, in that regard, exciting like that. I would take people out for typically week-long trips. Usually the turnaround would be Saturday. So they would get off the boat Saturday morning. You would spend the day cleaning the boat. And then 4:30 in the afternoon, it was cocktail hour and you were welcoming on board the next batch of guests. And we would spend the winters doing that. And the summers, I would work as a tour guide back in Cambridge on the riverboats, which I've done since I was 16. So that was the first job I had, working on these tour boats in Cambridge, going up and down the river on a wooden boat with a wooden pole, pointing out the kind of the historical stuff as you go, the different buildings. Because Cambridge is, it's a famous university and there's some beautiful architecture and some very famous people that studied there.
Oh, wow. So basically you would take people right through the middle of the city on an old traditional boat so they could slowly just check it out and take it all in.
Right through the middle of the city, yeah, on an old traditional boat. And yeah, there were three main stations, one at each end of the city and one in the middle. And by the time I think I was about 23, I was working at the one in the middle, which was Trinity College, Cambridge. And it was paradise, Dave.
Yeah.
We'd spend the summer taking people up and down the river on tours. And in the winter, I would fly out to the Caribbean and do sailing trips there. So it was amazing.
Yeah, so you loved it. You loved that. Was a cool job. That sounds like a pretty cool job.
Yeah, very, really, really cool.
Nice. So the boat building. So when did that develop for you? When did that start up?
So the boat building was the punts in Cambridge that I was building. And that kind of took place quite organically. I started off by doing the tours and helping out and just showing a real interest in the maintenance of the boats and helping with the maintenance of the boats. There's the two guys there, Paul and Keith, who were running the punt shed.
What's the punt? So that's the name of the business, the punt?
No. The punt is the name of the boat.
Oh, the boat.
And yeah. the word punt or punt is a Dutch word, which means to push.
Oh,
I mean,
gotcha.
I know you punt a football.
Yeah.
Here, but you push a boat. So if you think of like the flat skiffs with the guys poling off the back, it's the same thing, but just kind of on a traditional wooden boat, which traditionally they would have been used for wildfowling and maneuvering kind of goods around the kind of the flooded areas where we lived, because where I'm from is the Fens and it's very low lying and it's predominantly flooded. So yeah, that's what they were used for.
Gotcha.
So the Cambridge punts.
Cambridge punts. Yeah. So that's it.
Yeah.
So you're doing, working on the boats. So ultimately did you build a boat completely from scratch?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I started off by, working very closely with Paul and Keith, and weirdly Paul would have me kind of sharpening tools for him, just little things like that. So I would learn to kind of like over. I mean, I think I spent one whole season just sharpening chisels.
Oh wow!
On a whetstone over and over again. So I'd do a punt trip, I'd come back and I'd sharpen chisels, and I'd say, Paul, is this sharp enough? And he'd go, no. And he'd keep me sharpening. I'm surprised the chisels didn't wear out, to be honest with you, with like the amount I was sharpening them.
Oh wow!
So I'm sharpening the chisels, sharpening the planes, and doing all of that. And then finally, one spring, I came back earlier from the yachts, from working on the yachts. And he said, we're going to build a boat. And I said, oh, wow, that's fantastic. And we did. And the punts that we built, we would order a tree, a hardwood tree, and that would turn up and it would be rough sawn. We would take those planks. I mean, they were huge. They were 22 feet long by 2 or 3 feet, maybe 3 feet wide. I mean, they were big planks. We would take them to a specialist lumber yard that would run them through a thicknesser and put the finish on them. And it would take three planks to build the boat. And then what we would do is we would basically cut out the angles of the bow and the stern of the boat using a form that he had for every boat. They would then get pieced together. We would run a piece of string down the center, and that piece of string was how we would build off the boat right through till we started putting the seats and the back deck in.
Wow. So that's it. So you use the one piece of wood to do basically, you could build that boat from scratch.
The boat was built from scratch, and it was just so interesting to work with him and build the boat because every single boat is different. You come up against hurdles. It's not very often these days that you build something from start, absolute start to finish, if that makes sense. You
Yeah.
know, you might buy bits from a store and put them together, or you might do this, but to actually build something from start to absolute, from the tree to the boat, is quite something. And you come across hurdles. The wood doesn't want to bend a certain way, or it doesn't want to do this. And just having that kind of calm, collected head that he had to just say, this is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to work it. This is how we're going to maneuver it. It was priceless. And to kind of sit there and kind of work on that was amazing. And he always wanted to do a wee item. He was Scottish. So he always wanted to do a wee item. And once we'd done that wee item for the day, that was it for the day. And if that wee item took 20 minutes, we'd spend the rest of the day reading the newspaper and drinking coffee.
And what's a wee item?
Wee just means small. It
Oh,
was
just
just
small,
his way
yeah.
of saying a small. So basically, he wanted to do it in stages. He
Yeah.
wanted to get a stage on. And so long as once we'd done a stage, he wanted to stop for the day.
Oh, wow.
He didn't want to then progress to the next stage.
Yeah, and why was that? Why, obviously it
You
probably makes
know,
sense, but why was that?
as a young man, I found it very infuriating.
Right. Well, and from an American perspective, you know, it's probably a little different out here. You know, we might be just go, to the detriment, probably, right? Go, 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 go until you fall away and die of a heart attack, right? Sometimes, but that's the opposite. It sounds like what he was doing.
It was just, yeah, it was infuriating because I wanted to get on and I could see that we could get on. We could absolutely do something else or we could work on another project. But the older I get, it sounds awful to say that, and the more I kind of work on stuff, and now with my bamboo rods that I'm building
Yeah.
and the different rods that I build there, I see the positives of doing a wee item
Oh, yeah.
and kind of like going, what? Okay. Back off. You've done what you need to do for the day.
Right.
Let's just go and do something else. Let's go and clean the house. Or, you
Yeah.
know, it used to be, like I said, I used to roll him a cigarette, fetch him his newspaper. I mean,
Oh,
he had
yeah.
the life. And we would move forwards. But I do see that, and I think it's he was a real artist or a real artisan in that regard. And
Yeah.
I think that's what it was. I think
Right.
he needed to kind of like process what he had done. And what we had done, and sometimes we would go back over it the next day, even though I thought it was fine,
Yeah.
we would then go back over it the next day. And the one thing I would say about Paul is he had this wonderful ability to be able to build a boat without ever touching it. So his explanation to me, I built the boat through him, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So he had this wonderful ability to be able to explain what he wanted done. I would do it. He would say yes, and then we'd move on.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And what was
Yeah.
his, did he learn from some saint? Was this passed down from somebody else, or did he teach himself this skill?
You know what? I think it depended on the day when you spoke to him and who he was talking to. He was a wonderful storyteller.
Oh, right.
So I don't think we ever got to the bottom of exactly
That's
where
so
he
cool.
learned
Wow.
it from.
But
if that makes sense.
It does. That explains a lot about you and your bamboo, what you're doing now. And we'll just give a shout out to at Bamboo Few. We'll have a link in the show notes to people that could check out, because you have some great photos of the work you're doing. And but your stuff is like perfect. You know, I mean, I think you look at that and the day we talked about, we're going to explain here, was kind of like perfection too, I feel. I mean, you could probably explain it better, but is that what you did? So did you then start to slowly take that into building bamboo fly rods after kind of into the, getting into the boats there?
No, it wasn't. No. So I've always fished and I've always tied flies. I've always enjoyed tying flies and I've always enjoyed all of that. I think the first rod I wrapped, not made, but kind of built, was in 2012. And that was for a really close friend of mine called Michael for his 65th birthday party. And I gave him this bamboo rod. I bought the blanks and I wrapped them. And, you know, he was a huge, huge split cane nut. He loved the stuff. But it wasn't until COVID that I really kind of had to have a project, had to dive into something. And it was then that I was, you know, I was a stay-at-home dad taking care of my daughter. She was 4 or 5 months old at the time. And I'd take her out for walks in the backpack. And we found a bamboo forest on the side of the freeway here in Atlanta. And I went through the bamboo, found a piece that I thought was had naturally cured, because bamboo is obviously, it's green when you cut it down. And I knew that I needed a piece that was naturally cured. So I found a nice piece that was naturally cured, went back to the apartment with a baby on my back and a piece of bamboo slung over my shoulder. And that was it. I started building bamboo rods on the balcony of our apartment. And I had to make everything. I made the forms. I mean, I didn't make the plane, obviously, but I knew how to sharpen it because of all those years. But I made the forms. I had to work out the tapers and get everything kind of, you know, sorted out. And I ended up building a little 5 foot, 2 piece split cane bamboo rod, which I've still got. I still fish. I took it over to England and fished it on the chalk streams over there. And it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It was a really lovely thing to do.
Imagine your perfect cast in the pristine waters of Bristol Bay, the heart of the Alaskan wilderness. Togiak Lodge sits in this unique paradise, offering unmatched fishing amidst breathtaking landscapes. Envision yourself right now amidst nature's best, with every fish narrating its own epic tale. You can visit TogiakLodge.com right now. That's Togiak, T-O-G-I-A-K. Your story woven into the fabric of Bristol Bay, where every cast is a memory, every fish is unforgettable. Waters West Fly Fishing Outfitters is your go-to resource for swung fly techniques, two-handed casting, and anadromous fish. Find out why Waters West has built a cult-like following around their fly tying materials and why they are the go-to resource for the OP and beyond. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/waterswest right now to check in with Ed and Kyle and get all geared up to get on the water. And I'm assuming you fished a lot of graphite rods and other types of fiberglass stuff like that over the years.
Yep. The first rod I ever owned, actually, I looked at it last summer. I've still got it. And it's really interesting. It's got it's a two-piece rod. It's got a fiberglass butt section and a graphite tip section.
Oh, wow. That's pretty crazy.
Which is quite cool, you know, to think. And it makes sense because it's from the early 80s. It's at that time where I guess, you know, the rods were still slower. They weren't the fast action rods, but they were clearly moving towards the faster action tips with the graphite on the tip.
Right.
So I need to break that out and fish that.
Yeah. Is that the biggest difference between like a bamboo rod you're building today versus, say, just a graphite rod, just the slower of the speed? Or what do you love about fishing the bamboo?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Bamboo is a slower material than the graphite. And in that regard, it's never going to compete in, you know, right up to like super, super fast rods. But we do have, you know, a lot of contemporary tapers now. If you look at the spey rods that are coming out with the bamboo that I'm building, certainly the trout spey rods, the way that we can put an internal taper so we can hollow the rods as well to help with their reaction times and their recoveries. And the same with the single hand rods as well. They can actually be quite, you know, they can really be quite fast. And one of the things I'm trying to do is build these rods, these contemporary rods to go with the modern lines. And they're not, my rods are not going to be as fast as a graphite rod, but at the same time, I'm not sure I want them to be. That's not the goal. The goal is to have a really beautiful casting rod that you do slow down a little bit with. And I think, you know, I've said it to other people, I think slowing down in this world, in this pace, doing a wee item and stopping, I think that's a good thing.
That is. No, I think you're onto something here. This is for sure. Everybody should be thinking about that instead of, like I was saying, instead of trying to push it all day long, like maybe take more stuff off of your calendar, off of the to-do list, and say, hey, I'm going to get one thing in, you know, important done today. And then after
Absolutely.
That, I can take time and go fishing or hang out.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe push the boat out and do two things.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. Get the boat
but,
out.
You know, but yeah, I think that's right. If you can get out there and, you know, achieve stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Well, let's talk about, I mean, I think you definitely achieved something on this trip. So let's break this down a little bit. So we did this trip. Jeff Liske was our guide. He was kind of, you know, the guy like he always is. And talk about this. So I want to take it out. We were there multiple days, but you had this day on the river where you really had this goal of catching a steelhead on a, you know, basically the traditional bamboo spey rod you build. And just talk about the setup. What were you using that day when you hooked that fish?
Yeah, I think it was the last day of the trip, right? Yeah. I mean, so just throw that out there as well, because that was the key thing. So it was the last day of the trip. I'd gone down a huge rabbit hole about traditional tackle, and I'm still down there. I haven't come out of it. I'm fascinated by it all. That's not to say that I wouldn't fish. I don't fish, you know, the normal way too.
Sure.
When I can. But what I wanted to do was, when I built the bamboo spey rod, is I really wanted to put a fish on that rod and see how it worked. That was the goal. So I thought, great, that's the plan. But then, you know, you've got silk fly lines for these single-handed rods. Well, you know, they used to have silk fly lines for double-handed rods, for spey rods. Why aren't there any out there? And I guess there's just not a market for it. But I found a guy called Ian Moxton in Yorkshire in England, which is north of where I'm from, and started chatting with him. And I asked him for a trout spey. I wanted a trout spey head. Because I thought that would be, because that's what I do here in Atlanta. I do a huge amount of trout spey. And he came back and he said, I'm actually developing a Scandi line for somewhere like between 400 to 450 grain weight. Are you interested? And I said, just send it over. Let me know what you can do. And at the same time as kind of starting to kind of go down that side of things, I came across horsehair leaders, and I thought, oh no, why did you click on this?
Right.
So now you've got the horsehair leaders.
Yep.
And I start chatting to a guy in Norway who makes horsehair leaders. And I said, you know, could you make me a couple? And he said, I don't make them. I just have them for myself. And I think the truth is I think he probably didn't want to kind of send them out because he was nervous that I probably wouldn't like them, or I wouldn't, I think I just get that feeling that maybe that's what it was. But I kind of said, look, please, I really could do it. I would love these. This is, and I explained what I was doing and I told him what the plan was. And then of course the traditional flies and, the blind eye hooks with their,
oh, right.
With the little kind of, loop. The cat gut loop at the front?
Yeah, right.
Was there too. So there we go. I got the had the bamboo rod. I had the silk Scandi fly line that he had made. I had the horsehair leader, and I had this beautiful Perrin reel that had been made for me by a guy in England too, a guy called Ben Perrin. And that was the outfit.
That was it. So you had this full outfit that just you described. And then as I remember, because I was there kind of watching this, and I remember you're fishing this run, and I think we knew there were fish there, but I don't know if you hooked up. But Jeff, talk about what Jeff Liske, he came in and gave you some advice. Talk about that and then what happened.
So first things first, we're missing the fly.
Oh,
and
yeah,
the fly,
yeah.
the fly is key to mention, because I had got these smaller hooks from a guy called Adrian Cortez.
Oh, yeah.
Over on the West Coast. And he had very kindly sent me these hooks, which I tied some flies on. But it just seemed that they were maybe just a little bit too small for what we were doing. And one of the guys on the trip that we were with had tied, I mean, this thing is, I'm going to frame it, is the most beautiful fly I've ever seen. It's called a dunt, and it was tied by Bill. And I can't remember his last name, Dave.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I'll put a link in the show notes to episode 169. We had Adrian on the podcast, and they can follow up with him.
Okay. And Bill tied this fly called the dunt. It's a salmon fly from the 1800s, and that was on the business end. Anyway, I'm kind of walking down the river. You and Jeff turn up. Jeff knows that there are fish. He can see them just moving there, just slight shadows. And it was tricky because of, you know, without having sink tips and getting the fly down to them using the more modern style lines, Jeff just very calmly, and as Jeff is, very calm,
yep,
very knowledgeable individual,
yep,
just said, okay, let's shorten up the line. Let's go back up to the top of the run. Let's cast. Let's put a big mend in. Let's take two big steps. Let's keep the rod tip high. Let's lower the rod tip down slowly. Let's get that fly to sink and let's swing it through and let's see what happens. And we did this and we did this and we were working on it. We were working on getting that fly down, and suddenly everything just went tight. It was unbelievable. I remember looking up at Jeff and he just, corners of his mouth turned up. And you were, I think, back to my left, so you were behind, yep, me watching,
yep,
as well. And
that was it.
Yeah, this beautiful, beautiful cockfish was landed a few minutes later. Absolutely cracking. Sorry, the reason I kind of like slowed up there is because I was thinking about it. It's an amazing, it was amazing. I was really taken aback by the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm looking at a photo of it on your Instagram now, that there's a photo of it with the fly. Yeah, the fly is really cool. It's kind of a darker fly. It's got jungle cock.
Isn't the fly cool?
Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, jungle cock, yeah, cheeks. Really, really pretty fly. So there we go. The goal on that trip was to kind of catch a fish on the bamboo rod. Then it was to catch a fish on the bamboo rod and the silk fly line. And then it was to catch a fish on the bamboo rod, the silk fly line, and a horsehair leader.
That's right. That's right. And you caught more on that trip. We were there 3 days of fishing. You caught more than just the one, right? You caught some other fish.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I caught, we had that. So the first day was a tricky day, and I worked hard with Jeff and his friend Will, and actually worked on my casting because,
oh yeah,
you know, the one thing I really do enjoy is working on my casting and getting my casting. You know, I know that I can always improve my casting, and it's, yep, one thing that I can always work on, and
yep,
until the end, which is great.
Right.
The second day I was fishing with you all day, and you got dropped off at a spot, didn't you? And
yep,
it turned out to be Steelhead Mecca.
Yeah, that was a good spot.
Which was great. And then I came back up and fished through it and caught one through that run. And that was the second day. And then the third day I caught a couple as well.
Yeah,
that's right. So I was very lucky. It was great. And actually I think that one that we worked with Jeff was unbelievable. And then that the last one that I caught as well was just, I mean, you know, that was wonderful. I was fishing the silk line, the horsehair leader, and I had a fly on at the end called I called it Elvis because it was tied using the hair from some really good friends of ours, dog. And it was I think it's a Shih Tzu. The dog was a Shih Tzu and the dog was called Elvis. So I called the fly Elvis and I was just working down the run. And I mean, that fly got smoked.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And yeah, so that was great.
Yeah, that's great. Now, and I'm just looking back. So the bamboo rod building, we're not going to go deep today. We might talk later with you on another podcast, but we did have a few episodes. One I'll highlight, episode 343 with Bill Oyster.
Oh, yeah.
Really broke down the steps to making a bamboo rod. And but
yep,
what you do is, I mean, I think pretty unique too, because you don't use tools. Maybe talk about that. You don't use any. How is your bamboo different than, say, maybe some other folks are making bamboo out there?
So I do use tools. I don't use any power tools to make the rods, with the exception of when I'm turning the handle. I've rigged up a little device, kind of made my own little lathe using a handheld drill that my father-in-law gave me. So, you know, because I need to get that, I need to get the correct, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, the rotations up so that I can actually make the handles that I'm after. But otherwise, everything else I do by hand. People make the rods differently. I don't think there's any right or wrong way of making it. I just happened to be, from where I started on the balcony of the apartment up until now, where we moved a year ago and I've got a shed in the back garden, I've just been making everything by hand, and I can kind of whittle it out and get it sorted, and I enjoy the process, and I can make that happen, and I just enjoy the process of it, and I like that. Will I make as many rods as someone else that maybe is using a machine to kind of put the initial groove on it and stuff? Probably not, no, but that's okay.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, you're good with that. And are you now, if people are interested in checking into this, are you building rods for people out there, like right now, if they wanted to get a bamboo spay rod?
Yeah, so I've got, I mean, it's like I said, I'm very much small batch, you know, very, very niche in that regard. My focus is really kind of, I love to swing flies. So I've been developing a trout spay range. And at the moment, the biggest rod I've made from the spay side was the rod that you saw me fish.
What was
Jeff,
that?
With Jeff Liskay.
What was that? What was the weight and length?
It's an 11-foot, three-piece, spliced, jointed. So you had to tape it together. And it was for about a 400, 450 grain Scandi line, somewhere around there. So like a 7 weight, something like that. Seven, eight weight.
Where would somebody start? Maybe you wouldn't know, but like if somebody is wanting to get a setup like you had, you know, the bamboo spay, the silk, kind of all that stuff. It sounds like the silk lines are hard to get, but where would somebody go to learn more about all this? Where did you learn about kind of all this? Was this just Google?
Well, I think when you have an interest in something, you go down, you know, you just start reading as much as you can on the internet. I've also got a bunch of books. I'm not actually, there's a particular book that's it's in the house. I can send you the name of it, which is, and you can put it in there, which is great because it's very interesting. But, I mean, feel free to get in touch with me if you're interested.
Okay.
In that kind of stuff.
Perfect.
Silk Lines, Ian Moxton, he's on Instagram. You can get in touch with him. He's a good guy for that. Hooks. And traditional flies. I bet actually there's quite a few people around making those, which is fine. But just going back to what you're saying with the rods, I have been building rods and I have got rods out there. I've got a couple of rods in Australia. One guy is fishing. I've got an 8 weight salt rod that I developed, and he's out there fishing for Queensland tarpon, and he's been catching them on it, which is cool. So I think that's pretty impressive. I've got a rod to build for a guy in Germany and one guy in Finland, and I'm currently building a spay rod for a guy here. I can't remember where he is. I think he's in Ohio, and he wants to swing flies for cutthroat. Are they cutthroat in Ohio?
I
think that's what he said. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm building a trout spay rod for him.
Oh, okay.
And I'm building two trout spay rods side by side, and I'm going to send one out to you to try out as well.
Oh, right, episode. Right. Yeah. This is all. And is the trout spay rod, will those have a ferrule? Or because I know that the taping together is definitely a unique way to do it.
No, they're going to be taped up.
Yeah.
They'll be taped. I really like the splice joint that you tape for a couple of reasons.
Yeah, what is that?
A splice joint is if you take two bits of the pole and you have the same angles on each end, and you put them together and then you tape them up, and it, you know, it creates a lighter rod and more of a one piece rod. It's the way that my Scottish grandfather used to build his rods, although he didn't use electrical tape. He did, like, he would use wet leather lace, about bind it up, and then it would shrink as it dried and it would go nice and hard. I like that. I like the fact that it reduces the weight, and also it's people talk about the metal ferrules creating a weak spot, or can create a weak spot And the idea of the splice joint is it doesn't. The taper just continues.
Gotcha.
So that's just how I like to build them.
Squalla Fly Fishing puts as much time, thought, and effort into designing fishing apparel as you put into finding fish. Founded in Bozeman, Montana by a group of fly anglers who wanted better gear, Squalla builds functional, comfortable, and dependable fly fishing apparel. I've been loving the Thermal 150 hoodie I've been wearing from Squalla, and to be honest, I haven't been able to take this thing off. It's super soft. It's perfect in the whether you got hot weather, cold days. This thing is an all-around great piece of gear. Combining advanced materials with fishing-focused, purpose-built design, Squalla waders, jackets, shirts, pants, and insulation are made for us. To help Wet Fly Swing listeners, that's you, Squalla is offering a 10% discount on your next order. Just use WetFlySwing10 at checkout right now to get 10% off your next order. That's Squalla, SKWALA. Gear for us, the like-minded few serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Yeah, I mean, this is really cool because I think that, like we said, we'll put some links out where people can go. But you've built this thing and you're, basically, I mean, this is the thing you're spending. This is like your passion. I mean, you're in fly fishing. What's next for you? It seems like you got this steelhead, like we said, with this traditional setup. What's next on your list of to do to have these great moments?
So I think the next big thing would be to obviously work towards catching an Atlantic salmon on one of the rods. Now, to be very clear, it doesn't have to be me that catches the Atlantic salmon. So long as the rod is catching the Atlantic salmon,
okay,
I'm happy. In the same way that, when this trout's made, when I send it off to this guy in Ohio and he's catching the trout that he's catching there, well, I haven't caught those trout, but it's pretty cool to know that your rod's doing it in the same way that the rod's catching Queensland tarpon. So while I will continue to fish, because I love it, as you probably gathered, as a lot of people do, what's next for me is a continuation of my rods, tapers, and really working towards getting a few out there, getting people to fish them, and getting people to fish bamboo. That's the plan. So that's really what's next for me, I suppose. And also that I do think I will absolutely push more and more the traditional stuff. When I fish for brook trout, which here in the North Georgia mountains, to catch a 2-inch fish, I think you have to be a certain person to want to chase that all day. And it is, such a pretty fish and such a wonderful thing to do. And when I fish for them, I fish with between a 5-foot and a 7.5-foot bamboo rod. I fish a silk line. And I've got some horsehair on order that's coming. It should be coming any day. And I will be tying those into my flies now. And I will be fishing. Yeah, I think for those brook trout, they deserve full tradition.
Right, full tradition.
Yeah, and that's what I'm going to be.
I love it.
Going to be doing. And that's definitely something that I will be pushing over the next year. So stay posted on.
Yeah, I love it.
On Instagram, and maybe you'll see that.
That's cool. I think tradition is the word. I was kind of trying to come up with the word, kind of take all this in. I think traditional was the word I was thinking, not vintage, not any of that, just thinking like it's traditional, like going back. What's the time? What's the era? So people, when was the peak of horsehair? When did the people stop? Do you know that history at all? Stop using it?
Well, they would have stopped using it when mono came in.
Yeah.
Because mono would have just been, much easier to deal with.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure exactly when mono, how long mono's been around. So I don't want to pretend to know something I don't know. But I mean, horsehair, like any of these lines, people would have, they would have made it from, I guess, horsehair was a key one because horses were everywhere. Silk was later. I know silk was later. So you had horsehair first, then you had silk, and then you had horsehair and silk, and that's where they went from there. But yeah, that's I need to do more research on the history of it, to be honest with you, Dave.
Yeah, there is some. This is what's cool is that there is a ton of history, and you could probably just,
there really is.
Yeah, you could probably Google up something and start to figure out what that is. But yeah, whenever the plastics and the mono, right, that came in, there was, you got rid of the horsehair. But what is it like with the horsehair take? What is the difference between when you're fishing that horsehair? It seems like it would break easier, but talk about that. Do you have to be careful when you're hooking a steelhead on horsehair?
I just wanted to get that fish in as quickly as possible. So I felt like I put quite a bit of, to excuse the pun, I definitely felt like I horsed the fish a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was fine, wasn't it? You were there.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked good. It seemed fine. It seemed to work. When you fish silk has got no stretch, and the horsehair that I had no stretch. So that when the fish took, it was direct pressure from the word go.
Right.
It was that, it was straight on.
Which can be good, right? Which can be good for takes, probably.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think, I've noticed that when I'm fishing silk on a single-handed rod for the little brook trout and stuff, these tiny little brook trout versus, say, when I fished with plastic lines where there is a tiny bit of give, you've got that silk fly line with no stretch. And I think you get a slightly better hookup. The thing is that with silk lines, there's more work involved. You've got to dry them. You've got to treat them. You've got to take care of them. Same with bamboo rods. You can't just leave a bamboo rod in the car because, it's just not good for the bamboo rod. So I just leave a little 2-weight trout spay rod, graphite rod in the car with a setup here. So I've always got a trout spay setup in the car, but it's not a bamboo one. But then if I'm, if I get an hour and I can just dive off the river, it's in the car and I'm ready to go.
Yep, there you go. So you're ready to roll. And so that is one of the things with these bamboo. I mean, if somebody, if you make somebody a bamboo spay rod, if they take care of it, that thing's going to last just as long as graphite or anything else, right? It's a lifetime.
Oh, or longer, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely, it's going to, you'll pass that down to your kids or your nephew or your niece. Absolutely, yeah. It will last a long time. I've got an old Hardy's rod that I redid, and it's from 1911.
There you go.
And there you go. Yeah, yeah. And that was using, they used horsehair glue then. So
all right.
Or animal glue. So it's a slightly different glue. But now with the contemporary tapers and the modern epoxies and glues that we can use, absolutely, yeah. And there's nothing wrong with maybe sending the rod back to the maker after, if you've used it a lot, and you can give it a polish up and a tune up and get it back out to you.
That's awesome. Yeah. I was just looking at the history of Leader. It looks like 1939 DuPont came out with kind of nylon, and that was the first mono type leaders.
So. 1939?
Yeah, that's just a rough Google, okay. But yeah, so it gives us an idea. But yeah, makes sense. I mean, a lot was happening in that period. World War II was right around the corner.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of innovation.
They were developing a lot of stuff.
Yeah, a lot of innovation.
Oh, that's cool that you looked that up. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. So good. Well, I guess anything else we're missing here? I mean, I think obviously we're not going deep on the bamboo rod building and everything, but I want people to have a heads up on you, what you have going, because I think, I'm hoping that we meet up again, down the line and maybe on the river and have another experience like we did. But I just feel like watching you that day was pretty cool, but I don't want to miss any big thing out here today. Anything else we're missing?
I mean, from the actual school itself, the one thing I would say is when you look at kind of going on these fishing trips, always remember that yes, you're going out to fish, yes, you've got the guides, and and that's initially what you're thinking about, and you're told what rivers you're going to fish, but also remember the enjoyment that you're going to get from the other people that have signed up to do the trip with you,
right?
Because these people are probably just as crazy about fishing as you. They probably fish slightly differently to you, so you're going to learn stuff. I learned stuff from every single person on that trip that we went on. And it's going to be a real kind of, it's just great because you fish all day, you get back, and what do you talk about? Fishing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing and it's endless. And people are tying flies. People are making flies. You've got people there doing, what we were doing, our lines on the line reel. Bill had his little line reel. So we were reeling up our lines, going through different tackle, trying this, trying that. Look at this. So it's a real immersion into just fishing, and in this case it was spey fishing, which is what I love, for 3 days. So when I got home, I think my wife was like, wow, he's not talking about fishing.
You had your fill.
That's great. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that's quite important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And yeah, I, you tell me.
Yeah. Well, Bill, I want to highlight that because Bill is, I think, just as kind of crazy about this as you are, you know, with, and all of us, because he has, you know, I don't remember how many reels, or we talked about the rods. I think we nailed him down to like how many spay rods he has. I think it was just spay rods.
And you used one of his rods, didn't you?
I did.
That lovely fiberglass rod.
Yeah, I did. It was really nice. It was a Sage, I think. It was an older Sage fiberglass, I believe.
I can't remember. I just remember it was fiberglass.
Yeah, but it was really nice. I mean, I'm no expert caster, so, but out there it just felt good. And yeah, I think you just hit the essence of the trip. I mean, that's why those are cool, is that experience. And for me, it's a little bit of a struggle because this year, you know, as I set up more of these trips, it's getting harder for me to get out because we have a lot going on. And I was struggling a little bit because this year I went up and we had the new Rick Kustich was up in New York at the kind of.
That's right. Yeah.
Concurrently doing the same trip overlapping. So I spent time up there too. So I didn't get as much time. You know, I wasn't there for the whole trip with you guys. So I was a little bummed. I mean, I always feel like these trips are, you know, Jeff Liskey, you know, Rick Kustich. We try to find the greatest teachers out there. So, you know, so that's...
Well, Jeff Liskey is certainly that. And, if, you know, I would say if anyone gets the opportunity to spend even a minute with that man, it's a minute well spent.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going good. Well, the cool thing, and I will give a shout out here to this, is that I talked to Jeff yesterday and we're working on, we're doing some online courses. So we're building out a steelhead course. And Jeff, it's going to be like an online course, and anybody who is purchased or purchases these schools in the future will have access. So I think I told you about this, but we'll, once it's completed, you'll have access. And actually, if you wanted to jump on those, you know, as we're making it, you can do that too. So we'll check in with you. But that's really cool because Jeff's going to break down, like he does, you know, everything about steelhead fishing, how to catch steelhead fishing with the focus on the Great Lakes, but it'll apply it all over the country.
I think that's fantastic. Yeah, I think that would be really, really, really good for people that want to learn and kind of like up their game. I think that's
nice,
good, priceless information.
Nice. Well, let's take it out of here with our kind of the, you know, three takeaways segment. I'm thinking about today. You know, my thoughts were, you know, how do you give somebody kind of a primer on fishing with traditional gear, fly fishing gear, right? And you talk about how you're building it, you're taking to the extreme level. But what would be on today's conversation about traditional gear? What would you leave somebody with? Any tips or just advice if they wanted to get into this? If they're listening right now, like, man, I would love to catch a fish on a traditional setup. What are the takeaways from today's conversation for them?
Well, that if that's the case, my suggestion would be to just go ahead and dive in and do it there. If you want to catch a fish on traditional tackle, there's plenty of bamboo rods on the market. There's plenty of silk lines for single-handed rods on the market. With the horsehair leaders, that might be a bit trickier.
Yeah.
But you can always get a silk leader, and the traditional flies, you can do that too. One thing I think I would really like to do over the next year, and people can follow along with this, is I'm initially I want to build a 7 or 8 weight bamboo rod that is for kind of saltwater fishing or streamer fishing. I'm going to build one rod, and you can follow along the build, and you can check out the build as I build it. And then what I would like to do is I would then like to have people, I think it will work, but people can, if they can get in touch and just let me know that they would like to fish the rod. And what I'll do is I'll send the rod to them, and if they could fish the rod for 2 or 3 weeks, and then I'll tee up the next person, and they can, if they don't mind sending the rod on to the next person, that would be amazing. And I'd like to do that for a year, and I'd like to see where this rod ends up. I'd like to see what fish it catches, and I really want to follow the progression of this rod and where it goes. If it breaks, it breaks. Send it back. I'll fix it, and we'll get it straight back out to the next person. But, you know, I think that's what I would like to do next. So it's definitely something on the card. So if you're interested in that, check out the build. And once it's built, and I'll be putting this all out there, apply, you know, get in touch. And, you know, hopefully I can send the rod to you.
This is perfect. Yeah. And as we're speaking, I think it's, you know, we're kind of into January, going to be February. So this might go out in, say, March or something like that. So by that time, you probably, when are you going to start the build on this thing? You got a kid, you have a kid at home, right? So that you never know, right?
Yeah, man, I'd like to tell you next week, but the nice thing is I got wonderful dreams, and that's certainly a dream for me to do. But I think by March I should be well on the way to splitting some bamboo.
Yeah, splitting some bamboo. Awesome. So we'll follow you on Instagram and people can check that out. And like I said, I think that's a great idea. I think like passing a rod down throughout the community, like that's a really cool idea. And then, you know, I think if you do that, here's what we'll do, Ed. If you do this, because this is a great idea, is that let's circle back around once that thing's gone around for a year and let's tell the story.
Yeah.
Let's tell that story. I'll put it in the calendar right now and we'll tell the story of that rod if we're able to do it.
Nothing would make me happier. And yeah, maybe we could auction it off at the end and give the money to charity.
There you
That would
go.
be really cool.
Oh man, now I gotta ask, because this is a great idea. Is this something you've been kind of thinking about for a while, or do these great ideas just come pop in your head like when you're building?
No, this one I've been thinking about for a while. And yeah, I've been wanting to do it for a while. And I think, I guess this is probably a good platform to launch that on. And yeah, I've wanted to do it for a while, and now I've said it, I've got to do it. So that's the thing about me. I have to say things, and I have to commit myself to
Yeah,
stuff to make things
you're
happen.
doing it. I love it. You're putting yourself on the
Yeah,
spot. So right now,
it's a good thing.
yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, put myself on the spot, and I'll make that rod.
Good deal. All right, Ed. Well, I think we'll leave it there for now. I will. We'll send everybody out to at Bamboo Few. That's BAMBOOFEW on Instagram for digging in. I think this is a great call to action today. If people are interested in this, just learning more, and then yeah, and then everything else, man. I appreciate your time. I think it was for me. I think it was just one of those experiences I'll never forget, and a story that I'm sure I'll keep telling. So I appreciate everything you're doing, Ed, and looking forward to staying in touch.
Dave, I mean, it was just wonderful to fish with you, and it was wonderful that all the pieces of the puzzle, all of them, came together. And with the help of you and Jeff, I was able to land that steelhead, and you can see it on my Instagram. It's such a beautiful fish.
It is. Cool. All right, we'll talk to you soon, Ed.
All the best, Dave. Take it easy, mate.
That is a wrap. You can grab all of the show notes at wetflyswing.com. And please follow us on Instagram and share this episode out with someone you love. Please send me an email, dave@wetflyswing.com, if you have any feedback or want us to put together an episode on this podcast for you. Check in anytime. I hope you enjoyed this podcast and would love to meet up with you on the water. We have new fly fishing schools going all year long and all around the country. So if you want to connect, let's do it right now. All right, time to get out of here. I hope you have a great evening. I hope you have a great morning or great afternoon, wherever in the world you are. And I appreciate you for stopping by and checking out the show today. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.